May it please the court. I'm George Arend, and I represent John Archer, along with co-counsel John Budlong and Tara Eubanks. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
You may.
What we're asking the court to do in this appeal is reverse the summary judgment that was entered in favor of the Marysville School District on grounds of the recreational use immunity statute. And there's really two issues that the court has to face. The first is interpreting and applying the recreational immunity statute to determine whether it fits the relatively narrow and unique factual circumstances here, applies to school playground equipment, in particular a defective basketball hoop on school grounds that caused injury after school hours. And then the second thing the court has to do is to determine whether the school district has met its burden to prove as a matter of law that it's entitled to summary judgment in its favor, which, since it has the burden of proof, also includes producing evidence on every essential element of this defense. So I'd like to start with the interpretive issue. And just to frame the issue in terms of what the school district asked the trial court to do and what it's really asking this court to do on appeal, is as I read the briefing, it appears that the school district concedes that it's potentially subject to liability if a defective basketball hoop falls over and crushes a student before 3:35, the end of the school day at this elementary school, but that once the final bell rings, it's no longer subject to liability. And one of the key things that we have to do in deciding whether the recreational use immunity statute fits these circumstances is just determine what the legislature intended in adopting the recreational use immunity statute. That's what the U.S. or the Washington Supreme Court recently said in the Kamisha case, that we've got to look at what the legislature intended. And we've got a relatively unique set of circumstances, at least in my research, have not been able to, and in the briefing, to discover an analogy. But we have, in 1967, the exact same legislature that adopted recreational use immunity.
Are you going to the public or private issue? Is that what you're trying to say, that the word public doesn't mean public?
No. What I'm trying to say is that the same legislature that gave, on the one hand, by repealing the immunity that existed in RCW 28 at the time in 1967, repealing the immunity for schools for injuries arising from playground equipment, did it intend at the same time, the same legislature as March of 1967, take back what it had given by conferring recreational use immunity? Now, the original statute, it's true, did not include public versus private, but I don't think this argument really hinges on public versus private, when the question could be, did the legislature really intend to subject school playgrounds to recreational use immunity? You would think that if the same legislature who was doing both things at the same time intended that result, there'd be some indication either in the text of the recreational use immunity statute, which was adopted, you know, in a subsequent chapter, but essentially simultaneously, of the session laws. You would think that there'd be some indication either in the text of the recreational use immunity statute or in the legislative history that some recognition that, yeah, well, we're taking away the immunity on one hand, but we're giving it back, at least in whole or in part, depending how you interpret the statute.
Hasn't that train left the station? The Supreme Court and McCarver embraced the question and said a public park is, in fact, covered by the statute and rejected that kind of parsing of legislative intent?
I don't think they rejected that kind of parsing of legislative intent. They parsed it pretty carefully in the Kamisha case. I think there's a difference, there's a distinction, and this starts to get us into the text of the statute. There's a distinction between a school district and a public park. What Kamisha tells us, and I want to kind of turn to that and how Kamisha influences our interpretation of the statute, at least now under controlling Supreme Court precedent. What it does is it tells us we interpret the language of this statute in accordance with its purpose, which is to open up recreational lands. So we don't have to guess.
Parks were always open to the public for recreation, so one certainly didn't need to extend liability protection to municipalities in order to have parks open for public outdoor recreation. The Supreme Court had no trouble with getting past that.
Parks
applications, and it's done so multiple times.
And that's because maybe parks are solely for recreational purposes, whereas school playgrounds are for educational purposes. And the school district even cites the statutes requiring schools to provide for the physical activity needs of their students, which includes things like building the playground that's at issue here. And schools weren't built for recreational purposes, and school playgrounds certainly weren't built for recreational purposes. And this school was open for business before. Of course, they had the immunity under the former statute that was repealed at the same time that recreational use immunity was conferred. But there's no evidence, as if we're going to interpret this in light of its purpose, which is codified in Section 200 of 424, did the school really open this in light of the limitation on immunity? There's no evidence in the record that that's the reason that they did it. In fact, the evidence is, pursuant to statute, they built this playground in order for to provide for the educational needs of its students. And we also know from Kamisha that we focus on the intent of the landowner. Here, the landowner's intent, the public school district, was to provide for the educational needs of its students. We don't look at the intent of the user. So, like in
if your argument were successful, wouldn't that mean that the Van Dinter case, for example, is wrong because it's a school playground?
I didn't remember the Van. I thought it was a city park in Van Dinter,
well,
if memory serves.
Okay. So, but no school playground case would be right if it extended immunity.
That is correct. The alternative is you're going to the same student who's playing basketball right up to the closing bell as part of his or her PE class is protected until 3:35, and if they keep playing after school while they're waiting for the bus or something, and that playground equipment falls on them and crushes them, the school has no liability. That's the absurd situation that you're backed into if you don't find that school playgrounds are not subject.
Why is that necessarily absurd? I mean, lines have to be drawn. It sounds like this is an argument that you would make to the legislature in passing the statute.
You know, that's interesting because there is even though the statute defines outdoor recreation in non-exclusive terms, the history of this statute has been a series of piecemeal amendments to add particular areas of activity or outdoor recreation. Or settings or forms, you know, canals, swimming, canoeing, hiking was in the original, rock climbing. Anyway, there's been a series of amendments. You would expect that the burden, or I think the burden should be placed on the school district to go to the legislature if they really think that the legislature wants to immunize school districts for injuries on playground.
Well, I take it you'll get a chance to make that argument to the Supreme Court, but I think it's pretty clear they've said that outdoor activities of virtually any kind on public property are within the scope of McCarver, and the legislature in all those years has not said, gee, you got that wrong. We weren't trying to open up public parks or public, which would have had the least need for the statute, or something that's only open after school hours or limited hours. Isn't that your real vertical slope to climb here, is that McCarver has said public properties are included and the legislature hasn't said otherwise in the meantime?
No, I think Kamisha, respectfully, I would say no. The key inquiry is, like, the property, the I-90 trail at issue in Kamisha was public property, but the use, it was not opened for recreational use. Likewise, this wasn't open for recreational use. I'll reserve, if I may, the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You may. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning. Emma Gillespie for Marysville School District in this matter. And I want to be really clear about what appellants are requesting this court to do. Appellants are requesting that this court overturn and interpret what is clear, plain language in a statute. It says private and public lands. So, first issue. We have very clear statutory language. We don't get into statutory interpretation. We have plain language. Number two that they're requesting is for this court to overturn decades of case law that is squarely on point with this case, including the Supreme Court, including this court. This is not an issue that has been subject to divergent opinions.
Is there another case with a school district?
There's Home v. Kitsap School District. And that case is actually fairly on point in terms of the on-business and off-business hours issue. I'd like to come back to that, if I may. And then the third The third case, the third issue that I really want to make clear to this court is the public policy issue. There is very strong public policy behind this statute to make outdoor recreational activities accessible to everyone for free in a time when we have a national obesity epidemic and in a time
this is not going to get us anywhere.
I understand.
There's also very strong public policy that when people get hurt, there should be a remedy, especially when it's from stuff that falls apart because it isn't made well.
There is, and that's where we get into that balance, and that's my next
point. No, we don't get into any balance. I mean, we've got a statute here.
We do. We have a statute, and when I'm talking about balance, I'm talking about the balance that the legislature has arrived at in terms of offering a public good to everyone for free, especially in a time when we have a divergent socioeconomic status, and at a time when...
I don't think for a minute the legislature consciously said, we're going to remove liability from state parks, county parks, municipal parks. I think the Supreme Court did that. I think the legislature was asked to approve utility trails for use for things they weren't otherwise created for. And it was an exceptions, and it was narrowly argued and drawn, and to the extent the appellant tracks that history, they're not wrong. They just have a problem with Supreme Court.
Well, and I'm not sure that I agree that the legislature did not intend that, and specifically I would refer to there's a law review article that's cited in the Curran decision, I think it is. And it says, unlike some state statutes which limit applicability of recreational use legislation to certain specific activities, the Washington Act applies broadly to all outdoor recreation.
And what's the date of the article?
The date of the article? 1977. It's good sports and bad lands, the application of Washington's recreational use statute.
Well, what the legislature intended is really not usually something that we get out of law review articles, any more than we get out of staff reports from legislative committees. I mean, I think, got off to a good start with the plain language of the statute, but I would suggest that you not try to go too much farther.
That's fine, Your Honor. In terms of, I do want to take a minute to address a couple of issues raised by counsel. First, with regard to Kamesha and differentiating Kamesha. In that case, we had the I-90 trail. That trail was originally formed by WashDOT as a road, and Kamesha concluded and it was quitclaimed over as a road from WashDOT to the city. And the court's conclusion in that case was there was at no point a time when the city was able to separate use between recreational use and transportation. In this case, we have an issue, and I want to address what counsel was raising, was in terms of the use during school times and use during non-school times. The application of liability in that case makes sense. During school hours, we, as school districts, are encouraging students to use playground equipment, and we are at the same time supervising those students, and that's a big issue, supervision. When people are using the playground facilities after hours, there is no supervision of these individuals. So we don't know what activities led to this basketball hoop falling down. Nobody was there, and that's the point. There's a big issue between times when there is supervision of students and use of those facilities and times when there is no supervision and no direct district engagement is what I would say. So that and this is where I get back to that balance. I mean, that makes sense to me. Going back, we have several cases that say when you can have different uses at different times. And at this time, it's very clear there was a recreational use basketball outside of hours, no supervision, no fee. Recreational land use statute clearly applies in this case. And one other issue I wanted to address was the issue of who has the burden of providing meeting the burdens in this case. And in Jules, so yes, defense, the party asserting the defense has the obligation to show that the state, that the statute applies. However, once you get the application of the statute, it is plaintiff's burden, the non-moving party's burden, to show that there's a genuine issue of material fact. And we don't have that in this case. So if there are any other questions from the bench, I would be happy to take them at this time. But otherwise, I will move on.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.